Hey, howdy, space nerds. Thanks for tuning in each week as we explore space exploration. Don't let the conversation stop when you reach the end of this episode. Let's keep chatting online. We've launched a new Facebook page to host discussions and share the latest space news. You can find us by searching Are We There Yet Podcast or visiting facebook.com/AWTYMars. I'll see you there. From the studios at WMFE in Orlando, Florida, this is the Space Exploration Podcast that asks the question, are we there yet? Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. Elon Musk has a new plan for Mars. The SpaceX founder unveiled his updated vision for Mars and more at this year's International Astronautical Conference. It's a bit more scaled down than before, but still ambitious in true Elon fashion. And just this week, the Trump administration's National Space Council met for the first time, cementing the administration's plans to head to the moon. So what does this all mean for human exploration in deep space? Well, to make sense of the latest space news, we're joined by Miriam Kramer. She's the deputy science editor at Mashable and covers all things space. Well, Miriam Kramer, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's break it down. How has Elon Musk's plan changed over the past year, and what does that mean for his ultimate goal of colonizing Mars?
Yeah, so I think that Elon has become slightly more obsessed with the moon in the past year, which is fun for everybody.
Haven't we all, right?
Yeah, you know. It's the way that the tide is turning, it would seem, back to the moon. His plan now includes kind of cool looking moon base Alpha, a sci-fi name, as Elon is wont to do. It looks like that's sort of going to be a kind of stepping stone, get to the moon, and then we move on to Mars. He also, it looks like they are foregoing the Red Dragon missions. So that means basically the first cargo that they're hoping to send to Mars will likely be as a setup for human exploration, if I have that right.
And the rocket has kind of scaled down a bit too, hasn't it?
Yeah. So it's still supposed to be quite powerful, obviously. But it looks like it's going to be slightly smaller than they initially planned before. I don't know. I mean, that might be owing in part to the development troubles they've had with the Falcon Heavy. So maybe they decided, like, this is really all that we need, so maybe we're going to scale it down a bit and try to make things a little bit easier on ourselves.
And for our listeners, we did find out that the Falcon Heavy development was harder than Musk and the engineers thought to begin with, it, which is something he said, which is, you know, we kind of joke that it's always 6 months out, but it looks like they ran into some pretty difficult engineering issues with that rocket.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a lot more than they bargained for. So from what we know now, it looks like they're back on track with things, but I've also sort of been hearing that in all likelihood this November launch is just not going to happen, either owing to just schedule changes or something else. It might even be early next year that we get this launch. It's the forever waiting for the Falcon Heavy.
Well, space is hard. It's not easy, especially when you're developing all these brand new systems and rockets and stuff that's never happened before.
Yeah, exactly.
But with that said, in the presentation that Musk made to the IAC, he put out these pretty ambitious goals of 2022 and 2024 for missions to the Red Planet. I mean, from what you know, reporting on SpaceX and rocket development, I mean, it's ambitious, yes. Is it attainable?
Oh, gosh. This is always the question with SpaceX, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, Elon loves to set these lofty goals, and he does it with all of his companies. I mean, he does it with Tesla. He clearly does it with SpaceX all the time. And what I kind of wonder, even more than if they'll get it done in 5 years, which honestly I think that's a long shot. Like, I know that Elon sees that as a long way away, this 5-year goal. But, you know, we've heard him say the same thing about Falcon Heavy for how long now? I mean, yeah. we have been waiting on that rocket for a very long time. So if past performance is any indication of the future, like, we're going to be waiting on this whole system for at least 10 years. That's what I, that's, that was, is where I would put my money probably.
Well, I think so, it's fair to say, you know, on the other side where Elon has owned up to that and said, well, this is a lot more difficult than we thought for Falcon Heavy. This is a brand new rocket, so that's going to make it easier. And I'm not sure if that's true or not, but that's his rationale for some of that criticism about the delays with Falcon Heavy and how this is totally different.
Right. I mean, I see what he's saying, and I see how Elon believes that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I also think that the engineering challenge for the people who are actually putting this rocket together is something very different than what he probably is expecting as the guy who's looking at the overall goal. Mm-hmm. That said, I don't necessarily think it's bad that he decided to say 5 years, because that's now, you know, what we're all talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's almost beside the point whether they can do it in 5 years. It's the fact that they're aiming for this at all, and they are being ambitious about it. And in many ways, SpaceX has consistently shown that they can do these things. Mm-hmm. So there's no real reason to believe that they won't be able to do it. I'm just always skeptical of the timeframes given.
That's a very good point. I mean, when SpaceX first came out and said they were going to be doing, you know, landing the first stage booster, that seemed like a very ambitious goal. And now they've had, what, 16 successes in a row? I mean, it's...
Yeah.
You know, from something that people laughed at to something that is actually in practice and now is a major kind of industry buzzword now, reusability. It's pretty interesting to see the rate of progression that SpaceX has gone through.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to have watched it. And just in the past, like you said, just in the past few years, I mean, being able to land those boosters, I think that kind of shut a lot of critics up, myself included,
<Yes. laughs>
about their, you know, their ambition and their ability as a company.
Now, speaking of criticism, some of the criticism from Musk's first Mars colonization talks was on finances. He kind of jokingly had an idea for financing that mission, and it seemed like he came to grips with the fact that you can't just raise $10 billion from various different ways that he laid out. I mean, did he kind of address those financing issues on, you know, Mars Part Due?
Sort of yes, sort of no. He definitely had more information this time than he did before, but I didn't hear him give any really solid figures about how exactly money from, because I think that the plan for them is basically to use the money that they are getting either from ISS and other missions to basically funnel that into the big Falcon rocket and try to make that a reality and then fund the Mars missions that way. I think it's an interesting idea. I think it could work, but you know, SpaceX is such a closed-off company, and they're not publicly traded, so they have no reason to give us the figures that they're getting and the number, basically their profits from any launch contracts they have. So I am unable to kind of analyze it myself, which automatically makes me skeptical. Mm-hmm. As a journalist. You know, in lieu of seeing those numbers, it's not that I think that he's lying, but, you know, Elon has a tendency to exaggerate some things and maybe not be super down to earth, sorry for the pun, about the limitations of those finances.
We love puns on this show, Miriam. Don't ever apologize.
Oh, well, okay. I never will again. last time I apologized for a pun.
But that's a very good point. I mean, that journalists cannot see those. They don't have access to those financials, and it's very difficult to report on the, you know, actuality of something like this happening. And there's no reason for him to kind of put those financials out there, right?
Oh, my God. I mean, it would honestly, it would only be bad for him because that's all that we would talk about. Like when you get those numbers, like that's what you analyze. That's what you look at, because that's the fact on the ground. Like Elon wants us to be talking about the big ideas and his broad vision. He doesn't want us talking about the nitty gritty of, you know, the money that they're spending how profitable they are and what would happen if they lose another launch contract or if they have another mishap. Like, that's not what he wants us talking about. He wants us talking about his big Mars dreams.
Mm-hmm. And he's good at that. He's very good at getting people to think big and think broad, and has this phenomenal following of, you know, of folks that are all things SpaceX. It's intriguing to watch.
It is. It's intriguing. And to be totally honest, I understand why people are enamored with him and the way and his vision and the way that he looks at the world. It's a very intriguing way of seeing our universe, honestly. But I wish that people would be a little bit more skeptical of him and these big claims. Because he's still like a billionaire who is trying really hard to take like humanity, air quotes, to, out farther out into the solar system than we've ever been. And that deserves a lot of skepticism. Like, what was once only attainable through nations, now it looks like if this timeline sticks, like, they might get to Mars before NASA. Like, mm-hmm. So it's something that I think we all need to be very critical of.
It's an enormous responsibility, right? I mean, yeah. Colonizing another planet.
Exactly. And I mean, even framing it that way as a colonization attempt, like, there's a lot of baggage attached to that word and to how that's viewed on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And if we decide to take that same notion out there into the universe, I mean, we got to really think about what we're bringing with us,
mm-hmm.
Not just in up mass, but in, philosophy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And it brings me to my next question is, we're having this discussion of the hardware and the mission timeline and the funding. But has there been a discussion as to who these people are going to be? Who gets to go to Mars? Does everyone get to go to Mars? Is that kind of societal framework being laid out? Or is it even a question in people like Elon Musk's mind at this point?
See, I wonder about that, because I don't know if Elon is really thinking about who he's taking. I think he just wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that most people, the first thing they think about is, like, who's going? Because from the minute that a person steps foot on Mars, I mean, that will frame our entire idea of what that planet is about, even more than, these robotic mm-hmm. explorations that we've done before. I don't know, I heard somebody say once, like, imagine the first artist on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would that painting look like? And it would fully depend on who that person was. So these are the big philosophical questions. I'm not sure if Elon is grappling with it yet. I know that in his ideal world, the cost of a ticket to Mars will be the same as the price of a house, basically the median price of a house,
mm-hmm.
Which, in many ways is an affordable kind of idea for many people. But yeah, the question of who is actually able to go, at first it will absolutely be just incredibly wealthy people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not exactly a representative sample of humanity.
So Miriam Kramer, with this announcement and with the reporting you folks have been doing it there at Mashable, I mean, what are you hearing from folks in the industry? I mean, is this something that they're taking serious, or is this just kind of another one of Elon's big ideas?
It's interesting because this I haven't heard as much buzz about this talk as I did last year around the same time when he gave his first Mars talk. And it makes sense that this one wouldn't be as buzzy because this is very much an update to what he had said the last time. The most that I've heard is actually like excitement either from my colleagues or, I don't know, even the Secretary of State even said something about this the other day,
mm-hmm.
about point-to-point travel,
mm-hmm.
using SpaceX rockets, basically, on Earth. and just, you know, getting what to London in half an hour or something from New York. So that I think was an exciting moment for people realizing that that might happen, even though, you know, SpaceX is far from the first company to have thought of that. And I think that most of what the buzz has been around this speech is just like, oh, okay, so Elon is also kind of drinking the moon Kool-Aid. Like, for a while now, we've seen the tide in the administration turning somewhat back to the moon. We got confirmation of that, you know, just this week, that we are planning on a moon mission instead of some other intermediary mission before Mars. And so I think that it's clear that Elon also felt that tide turning and decided, like, okay, this is probably where the space money is going in the next 4 to 8 years. So we've got to get on some kind of Mars plan or some kind of moon mission as well.
Yeah, and that was at the National Space Council, which held its first meeting this week, headed by Vice President Mike Pence. In a piece about that meeting, you write, and this is one of my favorite leads from from all of the coverage: "The worst kept secret in space policy is finally out. The Trump administration wants to send astronauts back to the moon." Bravo on that one.
Thanks.
So, as you say, the goal is there. You know, Elon has kind of laid out a plan for that. Did we get any indication as to how a public agency like NASA might lay out missions to the moon?
You know, we didn't, which I think was quite a shame. Because really, this first meeting of the Space Council felt kind of like, I want to say, sort of a show. I mean, they did it in front of the Space Shuttle Discovery, which, I mean, its nose looked like it was like at the table, which was kind of funny
It was
looking.
really cool.
It was great. I really appreciated that fact. And I think most space nerds were like, oh, yeah, Discovery is really a part of this. But the council, while they asked a lot of questions and clearly were sort of trying to understand this big, complicated beast of space policy, we didn't really get any clear indication of what they even hope a mission to the moon would look like for NASA, which is something that I think a lot of us were really hoping out of it, because again, this was the worst kept secret in space policy. Everybody knew that we were turning back to the moon. The rhetoric had changed almost immediately after Trump got in office. So the fact that there wasn't any like indication of when this could happen or what it would look like, just that we're going to send Americans to the moon. I mean, it feels very much like the usual rhetoric of politics in space, which is grand ideas with no funding and no logical timescale.
And it was a little disappointing to see, you know, there had been some news about Russia and the U.S. partnering on research for the Deep Space Gateway. We're coming off with some announcements of, you know, habitat prototypes for the Deep Space Gateway. I expected that at least to be brought up as well, because there's been so much momentum recently on that, and zilch, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, they barely even talked about sort of other international partnerships, just only to kind of deride partners that we have in space flight. I heard a lot of talk about how Russia is like beating us, whatever that might mean, in space. And from where I'm sitting, I don't see much of an indication of that. I see an indication that we are partners in the International Space Station program. So it was just a lot of interesting rhetoric that felt very much like a show. In a lot of ways, I wish that they had just had sort of a normal council meeting and like sat around in a boardroom together and just hammered out the finer points of this stuff instead of sort of putting on this whole production that didn't feel like they were doing much of anything but posturing to me.
How does this moon mission play into the ultimate goal of of going to Mars? I mean, is this going to be the proving ground? Is this going to be a stumbling point? I mean, what's going to happen?
Maybe both. I think so. You know, Obama era idea was to go to an asteroid dragged into orbit around the moon and then prove out a Mars mission through cislunar space that way. There was not a lot of support for that mission, I'm not going to lie. But this idea is very much focused on bringing Americans back to the moon for the first time in 45 years and then moving on to Mars. That was the rest of the sentence, basically, was first moon, then Mars, which is something that folks in the spaceflight community have been advocating for quite some time. And I believe what the Bush administration was sort of going for with the Constellation mission. So it's sort of ping-ponging in this interesting way between, you know, Democrats and Republicans. Like, space has become increasingly partisan to the point where, you know, every 8 years NASA gets a new directive. And I imagine being at the space agency at this point is a little tough with the changing goalposts.
Is there any way to correct that? I mean, that's been a huge issue with space policy agenda setting, is that inevitably in 8 years it's going to change. There's no way around that. I mean, is there something that can happen that can make things different, or are we just destined to be going into this ping pong as you described it?
I think that there are ways of removing NASA a bit from some of the partisanship. For example, if you make the NASA administrator position a sort of an off-year political appointee, so instead of basically making it so that every time a new president comes in, they can wipe the administration clean and put in their new person, basically have the administrator be able to stay on through different administrations. And then that way, that would at least have some constancy of purpose. That said, I mean, it's still political, or, you know, it's still a government space agency. So you're always going to have some of that bickering. Congress is always going to kind of piece it up and fund certain things and defund other things, depending on, you know, who's in power at any given moment. Yeah, I think a start is sort of removing the administrator position from that type of political tug of war.
Can't take the politics out of politics, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's always been political.
Well, Miriam, you not only cover human space flight missions and robotic missions, but pretty much all things space. I'm going to put you on the spot here. What's kind of the story that's on your radar that you think folks need to be paying a little more attention to in the next few days or weeks?
Oh, gosh. Okay. You know what? This is space flight. This is another space flight thing, and it's a SpaceX thing.
Okay.
But something to watch out for is next week, SpaceX is going to do a kind of a doubleheader launch, I think on the 9th and on the 11th. And I believe one of those is going to be a previously used booster. And I think they're attempting landings for both. So it's kind of an exciting, you know, Falcon 9 filled week next week. So that's always fun to watch. I'm really curious about when we're all going to stop covering the landings. You know, I mean, no one cover, aside from the, you know, Spaceflight Now and Space News, not even Space News, but Spaceflight Now covering every launch. Nobody really covers every rocket launch anymore. So I'm really curious about when we're going to be like, they've landed another. Let's not worry about this one. We're just not going to write about that. Old news.
And who would imagine that landing a giant booster like that would become so routine that our editors don't send us out to cover it anymore?
I know, exactly. I mean, it's a pretty incredible thing. And it hasn't, I mean, it's been like a year since they've been doing this consistently. A year and a half.
Well, that's just a testament to the development of SpaceX and what they can achieve. So it's always interesting to to keep an eye on what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we've been speaking with Miriam Kramer. She's the deputy science editor at Mashable. Be sure to follow her on Twitter. She's a prolific tweeter, and there's really good stuff coming from her. Miriam, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Fun to be on.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Next week, we'll take a ride on SOFIA. That's NASA's Aerial Observatory. The folks over at SOFIA were kind enough to let me hitch a ride on the modified 747 jumbo jet as astronomers chase the shadow of Triton, Neptune's moons. I took a mic with me, and I'll share my conversations with the flight crew and astronomers, so stay listening. The conversation continues on Twitter. The show's at @AWTYMars, and I'm at @SpaceBrendan. Support for Are We There Yet comes from the listeners of WMFE. Our theme music was composed by Kevin McLeod. You can find more space news online at WMFE.org/space. And until next time, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.